We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Welcome in our man, Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee, talking to Chris about covering baseball a little bit here for the first time in Sacramento. And obviously it hasn't been perfect, but I'm sure it's added a nice little dynamic to your job over there at the Sacramento Bee.
Yeah, it's been fun. Like I was saying, like, it's just cool to have Major League Baseball in town. And, you know, whenever you'd, I mean, being in Sacramento, you're looking at, what, 2-hour drive each way, hour and a half drive, depending on traffic, to catch a Major League game. And now it's, you know, 10, 15 minutes down the street for me. So it's definitely fun. You know, I think it's been, whether or not you want to call it successful, is probably a mixed bag. I think the fact that, you know, the most high profile series, you find way more visiting team fans and A's fans, is sort of emblematic of how people feel about the A's overall. But in terms of the baseball experience, like, fans who haven't invested a ton of money seem happier with it than the fans who have, from like a ticket resale perspective. But, you know, I think we probably could have seen that coming. But no, for me, I mean, selfishly, it's cool to have baseball in town. It's tough to beat having to work a baseball game in the summer when it's, you know, nice and warm out, maybe a light jacket. But other than that, like, it's been a beautiful summer, so no complaints here.
Yeah, and it's tough for me to feel bad for anyone who did invest money into this. Like, if you invested a lot of money into the A's, my brother, that's your fault. And, like, I get maybe you got excited, and like I promise you, I understand, but man, the blame sits squarely on your own shoulders. You took that risk.
Yeah, and I will say, though, in defense of those people, like, there are some very interesting young players that the A's have.
Sure.
The problem is outside of Mason Miller, none of them pitch. So they got a potentially elite closer, but, you know, the pitching staff is kind of a mess. It's not going to be a great place to pitch as the summer goes on and gets warmer. So, you know, we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting wrinkle to have in Sacramento for sure.
It's 16-16 right now in Las Vegas, the Sacramento Kings and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're going to talk summer league basketball and why Chris hates it in just a second. But I want to talk about the Juwan Jennings situation, because we're, what, 6 days away from everyone reporting at San Francisco 49ers training camp. The Brock Purdy deal got done, and it was like, hey, man, we did it. We got through the offseason with nothing silly happening, and then a couple of days ago, Juwan Jennings is like, hey, man, pay me or trade me, one or the other. I'm entering the final year of my deal, and I have some thoughts on this, but you're the expert. You cover this team very, very closely. How big of a deal is this Juwan Jennings situation with the San Francisco 49ers?
I think it's a pretty big deal from a few different perspectives. I think objectively you can look at it and say, yeah, Jennings is worth probably double what he's getting paid. And particularly given the state of the 49ers receiving core right now, Brandon Ayuk coming off an injury, you don't fully know what you have from Ricky Pearsall, who dealt with an injury during the offseason program. And, you know, it's Juwan Jennings was basically your most productive receiver last year on a team that has, you know, designs to make a run to the playoffs again. So you look at contracts around the league, I think anywhere from that $13 to $15 million a year range absolutely makes sense based on the production that Juwan Jennings has had throughout his career. But he's making $7.5 million this year. And so you look at it, like, his agent's Drew Rosenhaus. He's done a lot of contracts with the 49ers front office in the past. There have been good times with Drew Rosenhaus. There have been some shaky times. You remember, like, Navarro Bowman and Anthony Davis going way back. Those were Drew Rosenhaus clients. So it's not, you know, Rosenhaus, obviously one of the most respected agents in the game. It was not totally a surprise to see the Monday, you know, 8 days before training camp starts, that Adam Schefter has this report. It seemed pretty strategic. So and yeah,
pretty,
I think,
pretty agent influenced. If you read the entire article, it was like, oh Jesus Christ, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah. But this, I think this is why the 49ers have been so hardline with their contracts in the past, because they don't want to set this precedent. Like, anybody who wants a new deal or who wants to push us around can. And that's why some of these, you know, Nick Bosa, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle to a certain extent, Fred Warner, like, that's why some of these deals have been hard for the 49ers, excuse me, to agree to, because they don't want to set the precedent of like, hey, if you don't like your deal, you'll just hold out and want a new one. But they ended up caving to the players, because that's kind of what you have to do in the long run. And you find yourself in a situation where a guy with a year left on his deal wants a new contract. And I think something can get done here. Like, the 49ers have a lot of cap space. They obviously need Juwan Jennings, and I think it makes sense for them to get, I don't know, a 2 or 3 year deal done in the range of $13 to $15 million a year.
Yeah, you know, one of the funny things about Casey not being here is sometimes when I present something, like, I talk so much about Juwan Jennings that day, I at first it was kind of like, Juwan, man, whatever, bro, like, trade him. I even told Kyle at like 11:45, like, who can, like, whatever, man, just trade him. Like, is that really what we're doing at this point? But by the time I got to a full on discussion with myself about it 2 hours later, I completely changed my own mind. I was like, okay, wait a second. Let's talk through this for a minute. Debo entered the year as the 49ers' number one wide receiver. He got paid. Brandon Ayuk entered the year as the 49ers' number one wide receiver. He got paid. Debo's gone. Ayuk is hurt. Juwan Jennings is entering this season as the 49ers' number one wide receiver. And I'm sure he's looking around that wide receiver's room. He's looking at that depth chart, and he's like, hey, pay me.
Yeah.
And it's not unusual for a football player to ask for some sort of extension or raise or whatever the final year of their deal. That's not unusual at all.
Yeah, and I understand the idea, you don't want to pay this guy, just trade him, or you don't want to deal with a headache, trade him. If you trade him, more likely than not, you're doing it for a future draft pick. Mm-hmm. And that draft pick is not helping you at all in 2025. Unless you can swing, you know, you'd have to get real creative, and maybe there's a player that out there that's available via trade at another position. And you could do a player for player swap, like, you know, the Dolphins and the Steelers just did with Jalen Ramsey and the former safety from Alabama, Minka Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a deal like that out there for Jennings, but I think that's hard to do at this point in the offseason. So to me, if you were to really seriously consider seriously entertain trading Juwan Jennings, you'd probably do it before the draft. Mm-hmm. Because at least then, okay, we got a third or fourth round pick or whatever, and that rookie can come in and at least help us in 2025. If you trade Jennings now, I would say it's 70-80% chance it's for a future draft pick. And then you're looking at it like, man, what do you say to George Kittle, Nick Bosa, and Fred Warner, these guys who are busting their tail all offseason to get ready to compete for a playoff spot, and you're just trading a key player on offense for a draft pick that's not going to help the team in 2025? It's a tough place to be, which is why I think they just have to pay him.
Also, you just paid your quarterback a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I love George Kittle, but I think part of the reason that they paid him was he's probably a great little, to use the old Tony Romo, Jason Witten term, he's probably a really good security blanket. I think a lot of tight ends are that to their quarterbacks. We see it with Travis Kelce, and obviously Travis Kelce just immensely talented, but like, he's a good little, you know, third and one, you know, second and short. They're gonna find their tight end. And signing George Kittle to a new deal, I think had as much to do with Brock Purdy as it did George Kittle. And I don't think you want to head into this very critical season for the San Francisco 49ers by subtracting one of Brock's weapons.
Yeah, and this probably goes to a larger discussion about Purdy, but like, to me, there's a certain level that Purdy hasn't reached yet, which is like, is he the rising tide that lifts all boats, or is he a product of the situation around him? And that's not a knock on him. I think he's played really, really well, and he obviously deserved to get paid, but we don't know if Brock Purdy can pass that threshold to where he can be the reason why the offense is successful, maybe more than the situation around him. And I know that's a constant like push and pull when it comes to discussion around quarterbacks, but like the Niners have been the most successful when they have an array of weapons. Like when Kyle Shanahan can dial things up and you can have multiple guys, Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, you know, going back to Emmanuel Sanders, Debo, like the Niners have always had three or four really good offensive weapons when they've been contending. And we haven't seen them really be the team that can get by with like, you know, George Kittle and a bunch of also ran receivers. Like we haven't seen the 49ers get to where they want to go in that situation. And also you're banking on George Kittle's health. You're banking on Christian McCaffrey's health. Like not having Juwan Jennings could be pretty detrimental considering the question marks you have on the offense. So I'm in the camp that like there's probably a sweet spot in that $13 to $15 million a year range that gets this thing done.
All of these wide receivers around the league getting paid at this exact moment probably aren't helping either, or at least helping the 49ers. Do you have, again, camp 6 days away, are you entering this season with expectations, high expectations for this football team?
Kind of. I mean, look at their schedule. Like, this is kind of the perfect storm for a bounce back, right? Like, you have... I mean, I don't think the Super Bowl hangover is a thing from the sense of like, oh, they lost a Super Bowl, so that means they're not going to contend next year. But I think it's a thing in that like it's a thing to have an offseason that's 6 weeks shorter, particularly when you have a veteran team. And the Niners have a veteran team. They have one of the oldest rosters in the league, and they get those 6 weeks added to their offseason where they're not, you know, putting the physical toll on their body to get ready for a playoff game or even playing playoff games or the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to benefit from that rest, that extra rest that they needed. And also like they're playing the AFC South, the NFC South, they got a last place schedule. Like they are, I know there's been a lot of turnover at the roster. I've been arguing all offseason with Kyle and I think are in agreement that like the Niners haven't lost anyone super important. Like Debo, the 2021 Debo Samuel is a 2021. He's not going to be the same player in 2025. Mm-hmm. Like you can argue like, okay, if Dre Greenlaw bounces back from injury and he's really good, maybe that's a substantial loss. I think Talanoa Hufanga was pretty replaceable. I think the guys they lost on the defensive line are basically replacement level starters. I don't view this as like, oh, they lost all of their good players and now they don't have a chance. Like the NFC West, I think is very even and it's going to be a tough division, but I could see the 49ers winning it. But just the fact that they have the AFC South and the NFC South on their schedule makes me think like expectations should be pretty high given how much equity the Niners have built up. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if they have, you know, 10 or 11 wins when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is still a really good football team. And as you pointed out, and this is important, that is a really bad schedule. That schedule stinks. It's almost so bad that when it came out, it was like, I don't even know what I'm looking forward to in this schedule. Like, that's just, and I guess you mentioned it's a last place schedule, man. It's a place the 49ers aren't used to being in, at least over the last few years or so. It is 23-23 right now as the second quarter gets underway in Las Vegas, the fourth summer league game of the Sacramento Kings. And Chris mentioned before we went live on the radio as we were just talking to each other during the commercial break, you are not a fan of summer league basketball.
Yeah, like the last time I went to summer league, 2009, I was working for a radio station in the Bay Area to cover a draft pick the Warriors made, seventh overall. And there were questions about whether or not Steph Curry could play point guard. So I went to Summer League to write about Steph Curry, and Anthony Randolph and Anthony Morrow each had games that when I was there, I think Anthony Morrow scored 47 and Anthony Randolph had a 42-point game. Mm. I was like, okay, you know, like after the fact, it's like in the moment, you're like, oh, this is exciting. Maybe these guys can, and Anthony Morrow had a nice career. Anthony Randolph obviously didn't, but like, it's kind of like preseason football to me, like when you see a third string or, you know, practice squad quarterback come in a second half and light it up. It's like, all right, cool. Like we can, this makes for interesting conversation, but how translatable is it to, you know, what we see in the regular season and definitely the playoffs? Like, but when it comes to Nate Clifford and the Kings, like the first thing I thought of when they drafted Nate Clifford, and maybe this was colored by the fact that it was so soon after the finals, but to me, he's like an Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith type, right? Like those are the types of players you need. And there's so much talk throughout the NBA about depth. I think what goes maybe a little bit under-discussed is versatility. If you can be deep and versatile, and I'm talking about like having players who can like pass, dribble, shoot, and defend, right? Like the Kings these last few years have had kind of one-note guys. It's like, all right, you have guys who can score, you have guys who can rebound, you have maybe a couple guys who can defend, but you don't have enough guys who can do all of it. And I don't know if Neat Clifford is going to be any good, and I'm not going to draw any crazy conclusions from Summer League other than the fact that like standing out on a Summer League floor probably means you deserve to be on an NBA roster, right? But like what his skill set represents is where the NBA is going. And so that I think is important. Like that's the takeaway for me when it comes to Neat Clifford is like, can he be somebody who's in your rotation potentially in a playoff game? Because he can pass, he can attack closeouts, you can run pick and roll, he can move off the ball, he can defend multiple positions. And that versatility, I think, is what the Kings have been lacking for so long. So getting a player who could potentially do that right after watching, you know, Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard do it for the Pacers in the playoffs, like that's encouraging to me. But again, I'm not going to come away from Summer League and be like, oh yeah, Neat Clifford's it. I know for sure because Summer League can lie to you.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It definitely can, and it has lied to Kings fans time and time again. It's lied to fan bases for years. I'm confident that's part of the reason Summer League exists, is to lie to fans of their teams. But one thing I'll say about Neat, in the assessment of tempering expectation is perfectly fair, he looks really comfortable on the floor. Like, yeah. The game doesn't look difficult for him. He doesn't look clunky. Like, there were moments, I mean, a lot of them last year. There were even moments this Summer League. Shoot, there were moments today where Devin Carter sometimes looks clunky. And I'm not suggesting that Devin Carter isn't an NBA player or Devin Carter belongs in the G League or anything like that. I'm just pointing out how unique that characteristic is for a first-year player like Neat, for a player who's been a pro for less than a month. Like, he looks comfortable every time he steps on the floor. And if I were to point at something for Sacramento Kings fans to be excited about, that's probably what I would start with.
Yeah, and if we want to sort of tie in this 49ers conversation we were having earlier too, like, that was probably Brock Purdy's superpower, is the fact that he played so much football in college that he came into the pros and he wasn't completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And Neat Clifford, the 23-year-old rookie coming in, was in school for 5 years, played a ton of basketball, is not going to be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he might not have the same sort of upside that, you know, that you look for in a bunch of the 18 and 19-year-olds who got drafted in the top 10. But the fact he's just more comfortable playing basketball than those guys and has been playing at a high level for longer than those guys could serve him well in the same way it served Brock Purdy. Like, it's there's a certain value to having experience that I think often goes undervalued. And that's kind of why, like, that's kind of why I think you see some really good draft picks late in the first round, where it's like, all right, this dude might not jump out the gym, or he might not be the tallest, longest guy, or he might not, you know, be somebody who put up 40 points a night in college or whatever, but like played a lot of basketball and really got comfortable and is not going to be overwhelmed. And so that's what I think you're probably seeing from Neat Clifford, is that like played a lot of basketball, two different schools, 23 years old coming in. Like he's got to be older than a lot of those dudes he's playing against. Right. So that's got to be helpful, and we'll see if it can translate. But yeah, I think there's, you know, I would bet on a dude who's played at a high level for multiple seasons in college, particularly if you're picking at the back end of the first round, as somebody who, you know, could potentially help you right away.
It seems most people, fans at least, aren't exactly thrilled about this upcoming season. They're not excited. They're certainly not excited about the off season that the Sacramento Kings have had, with the exceptions perhaps of Neat Clifford and Maxime Raynaud. What do you think about this team now that free agency is, you know, we're 2 weeks into free agency, Kings still have an MLE, restricted free agency is at a complete standstill, unlike anything we've ever seen in the league. There have been rumors out there about trades and players and all of this. Like, what do you think of the Kings offseason so far and what's ahead for them?
I would guess if you were to poll general managers across the league, I think they would raise their eyebrows at $15 million a year for Dennis Schroeder. Mm. And I understand the Kings' need for a point guard. I just don't know that it was so dire that you have to overpay for somebody like him. But at the same time, if your goal, and I, this is just me reading between the lines, like if your goal is to put Zach LaVine in a position to be like what he was with the Bulls last year, because going into last season, it was, man, Zach LaVine, completely untradeable, worst contract in the league. Then Zach LaVine gets off to the start that he got off to during the season. He's like, man, Zach LaVine's shooting 44% from three. Like, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, this contract looks way more palatable. And like, maybe this guy can really help a contending team at the deadline. Some team would be smart to trade for him. And now we're kind of right back where we were with Zach LaVine, right? It's like, yeah, this contract is really tough. I say all that to say, if you can get him to a place where he's being really productive and really efficient, maybe that's how you rebuild his trade value. And maybe the key to doing that is getting a point guard who can facilitate an offense and put him in positions to where, you know, Zach LaVine played a lot of point guard for the Kings last year after the trade.
Yeah.
And he's not that dude. Like he's a great scorer and a great offensive player, but he is not a facilitator. He's not somebody to initiate offense. And so if you can get him in position to be like what he was for the Bulls, maybe the value, or maybe the discussion around him and his value around the league changes a little bit. And to me, that's kind of where I think the Kings are going. They're not going to come out and say we're punting on the season, but you know, they're not going to trade. It's very clear. They're not going to trade Zach LaVine when they're in a spot where they have to attach draft picks to move off the contract. They'll try to resuscitate his value and trade him when they can actually get something in return, which they're probably doing with DeMar DeRozan. And I'm sure they're kicking around doing with DeMontis Sabonis. But that's kind of the corner they painted themselves in when they acquired Zach LaVine. It's like, yeah, he looks great right now and he's shooting 44% from three and being this really efficient player, but you're still stuck with that contract. And so I think as time goes on, like the big contracts the Kings have become more movable. And I get it, as a fan, that's not really where you want to be. But it's just going to take some patience because they've painted themselves into this corner with all these contracts.
I think with Dennis, I like Dennis Schroeder a lot. And I think with him is it's kind of a make the, if you feel like you're in a bad situation, make the best of it. And I think you said it perfectly. Like Zach LaVine is at his best when he has a facilitator with him, the likes of, you know, everyone points to Lonzo Ball and his time in Chicago. When Lonzo was healthy, that Chicago Bulls team was pretty good. And if you're able to get that out of Dennis Schroeder, he's not quite the floor general that Lonzo Ball is, but he is a really good point guard who can also score, and he could do some really good things on the defensive end. He might be the perfect guy. He might be the perfect type of point guard to work with LaVine and DeMar in a starting lineup. And again, it's not a, hey, we're off to win a championship. Hey, this is our team for the next 6 years. It's like, hey, maybe we're not in the best spot financially. Maybe we don't have some of the best contracts on this team, but we've got them. They're talented players. Let's make the best of what we got. And that's what I think Dennis is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just think 15 is a big number. But, you know, like if it's me, like when I'm looking at contracts, particularly one like Dennis is like, okay, say things go poorly this season and you decide, all right, we need to move off Schroeder next. Like, are people going to be trading for that contract next summer?
No one's like trading anything this year. The whole league stopped.
Well, right. But like next summer, like is Dennis Schroeder have any appeal on the trade market at $15 million a year? Like, obviously, it's an impossible question to answer right now, but that's sort of the lens I look at these contracts, particularly for, you know, given where the Kings are at.
Yeah.
Because they're in a place where they're trying to clear the books. I'm like, all right, is overpaying for a point guard? You know, but I get it. If Dennis Schroeder plays really well and facilitates Zach LaVine and some team at the trade deadline is like, yeah, we'll take Zach LaVine and here's a first round pick and the Kings don't have to attach, you know, that 31 pick they got from Minnesota. to get off Zach LaVine, then Dennis Schroeder is worth all that money, right? Like Dennis Schroeder will be worth it to the Kings if he can put LaVine and DeMar in a position to where their value changes in the eyes of other teams around the league. So if that happens, I think the contract will end up being a good one. If it doesn't, $15 million a year, you know, it's not the most money in the world, but it might be a bitter pill to swallow if you're trying to move.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Next summer.
And again, as much as I like Dennis, I think in that scenario that you just laid out, if Zach LaVine winds up in that position, there's going to be a lot of teams looking at Dennis Schroeder as the reason why. And suddenly that $15 million starts to look a little different for a team out there. Like, it's hard to think about the point guard position, you know, when acquiring a $15 million point guard, when Russell Westbrook hasn't signed, Chris Paul hasn't signed, Malcolm Brogdon hasn't signed, and you kind of look and see, like, he's, you know, maybe he's a slight level above, you know, those guys who are a little further along in their career. Well, Brogdon, not necessarily, but the other two a little further along in their career. Like, Dennis is probably in that same category, you know, tier of point guards right there.
Yeah. What do you think about... just, I understand the bet on Kuminga, Jonathan Kuminga, as a talent that the Kings might be interested in making. What do you think about the fit with the current roster? Can he come here and develop in the way that you would want him to with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan on the roster? That's a question that I would ask. It's like, all right, maybe you're doing this thinking that he would, you know, be your guy in a year or two. But in the meantime, like, can he develop into that with this current roster construction? That's where this Kuminga thing, I'm not really sure about.
All the way until that, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, whatever night it was, where all of those rumors just like hit all at once. I had just maintained, I don't see a pathway to Kuminga. I don't see a way that a sign and trade makes sense for the Golden State Warriors. I don't see – this was before I knew that the whole league had gone to hell and they weren't doing anything with restricted free agents. Right. But it was just like, I just don't see a pathway. Like, it doesn't make sense. And then when it happened, or at least when those rumors popped up, it was like, oh, okay. All right, so how does this work in terms of fit? So he's at the four and we're moving Keegan to the three. Like, how exactly are we doing this? And LaVine is still here, huh? Huh. Yeah, I've never, the Kuminga thing, while I like Jonathan Kuminga and I'm as tantalized as anyone else with his, talent, upside, whatever, I couldn't put those pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah, me neither. And I don't know if enough people are talking about, like, Keegan Murray's position in all this either. Like, if you're Keegan Murray and you see the Kings swing a trade for Jonathan Kuminga, who is due for a new contract. Keegan Murray's also due for a new contract. If you're Keegan or his representation, are you being like, all right, so you're going to pay Jonathan Kuminga? Like, what am I to you guys?
Yeah.
Are you guys going to pay me too? Yeah. Like, so, you know, like that, if again, like I just don't, if I'm Keegan, I don't know if I'm looking at the scenario like, yeah, you guys are really putting me in a position to thrive. And Keegan, obviously kind of a controversial subject, but like, I think objectively we could say with the addition of DeMar and focusing on LaVine and the Fox trade, like they haven't exactly been prioritizing Keegan's development and getting more shots for him. And, you know, I know there was a summer league a couple years ago where it's point Keegan and he's creating a bunch of offense off the dribble and all that. It's like, that's another reason why summer league lies to you. Like, you know, like Keegan can do a little bit more off the dribble now than he could as a rookie. But in terms of Kuminga, like, I just don't know. If I'm Keegan and they trade for Kuminga and then pay Kuminga, I'm like, hey, man, what am I to you guys? And do I still want to be here long term? So if I'm the Kings, I'm kind of steering clear. Unless Kuminga just falls in their lap for basically nothing, I don't really know the appeal.
Did you say that Keegan was a controversial topic?
Yeah.
What?
Some people love Keegan. Some people are like, he's not lived up to expectations.
I love that the idea of Keegan Murray just induces so much controversy in the city of Sacramento. But I get your point. He's a very, it's very split on how people right. feel about him.
Like, where do you fall? Do you think Keegan is a product of his environment, or Keegan hasn't done enough to impact the environment?
Yes. I put a lot of the responsibility on Keegan.
Okay.
I there are a lot of people who blame, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, all of these different people for why Keegan wasn't extraordinary last year. And I'm just like, nah, it's Keegan. Like, Keegan is the reason he wasn't. And, you know, maybe and I'm giving a lot of guys on the Kings passes for last year. Last year was chaotic with Mike Brown, De'Aaron Fox, you know, introducing a guy who's pretty ball dominant like Zach LaVine, you know, having DeMar DeRozan there to start the season. Like, it is completely different than what you went through the year prior and even the year prior to that. But, like, I'll wipe all of that out and say this year I'm expecting a lot from Keegan. I'm not expecting him to be a 20-point-per-game guy. I'm expecting him to be a little bit better than he was last year. I'm expecting him to shoot a little bit more consistently than he did last year. And I'm expecting him to be good.
Yeah.
Really good.
I agree. I think some of it, too, falls on the coaching staff, because it was very clear his rookie season what that role was. Like, the way that the first Beam team was constructed, like, it was Keegan's like catch and shoot guy. Like, that is, you're a spot up shooter and you're going to get a ton of easy shots because, you know, you have De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, and you have, you know, like, the primary action is going to be Kevin Huerter running off, you know, DHOs, and Fox is going to penetrate and you're going to get a lot of open looks. And then the offense has changed a lot. And even, you know, when they first incorporated DeMar, like, when I was, you know, talking to coaching staffs, like the members of the coaching staff, it was difficult for them to figure out the offense in terms of what was going to be, how it worked, because DeMar was so different than what they had previously. And I think one of the difficulties was figuring out how to maximize Keegan. And so, yeah, I think it's like, when you say yes, that's funny. Like, I think it's a combination of everything. Like, mm-hmm. Keegan's kind of a passive personality. Like, we all know that. Like, he's not going to yell at anybody for not getting him the ball when maybe he'd have a case to. But Keegan also needs to take advantage of the opportunities that he gets. Like, he still gets a number of open shots, and I forget what his percentage was this last year, but, you know, he should be like a 38 to 40% 3-point shooter, just like, full stop. Like, that's just what he should be, regardless of what the offense is and how much the offense is struggling around him. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think Keegan takes some of the responsibility too. Like, he's got to hit his open shots, but I would also argue, like, the developmental curve was a little bit stunted in the way the Kings built the roster around him.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I guess I understand that there's a lot of ball, you know, the DeMar DeRozan will have the ball in his hand. Zach LaVine will have the ball in his hand. So I guess to a certain degree, I understand that. But now I'm at the point where you've got to kick out. You've got to move on past that. And you've got to be an integral part as to why this Sacramento Kings team is good.
Yeah.
Which You're right. Back to like Controversy surrounding Keegan Murray. Who knew?
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Keegan's definitely an intriguing figure going into the season, but if I'm Keegan and they get Kuminga, I'm just kind of throwing my hands up like, all right, how's this going to look?
Yeah, the Kuminga thing, that creates a whole different acquiring anyone at this point, whether it's Kuminga or whether it's another point guard, you probably have to take someone out. And you know, obviously we have heard and obviously Kuminga would be a trade. So there would guys that would be moving, but who would that wind up being? Like, the idea of Saric and Carter, like, it's like, all right, I don't know that that's going to accomplish what you think it will. Even if the Warriors were like, great, yeah, that's perfect, I don't know what that does to this Kings roster in terms of making it whole again. And it feels like one of those steps Scott Perry might be taking to where, yeah, it's not the most ideal move this year, but a year from now or even a year after that, you know, we're going to be in a pretty good spot. But
yeah,
that's a dangerous way to live.
If I'm Perry, like, I'm, this whole season is about vibes. I'm trying to make sure the players all have as much fun as possible playing.
Yeah.
Because it gets ugly where I think, like, the players are realistic. Like, they understand sort of where the Kings are at in terms of, you know, they're not rebuilding right now because they haven't made any of those moves, but they're trying to get to a place where they can rebuild. And I think the players are probably understanding of that. So at least play a fun brand of basketball and, like, make sure your locker room is happy, because it can get toxic much more quickly in that scenario.
Just a whole bunch of cooks, man. Why not? great stuff, Chris, man. Great to catch up with you, talking a variety of topics here, man. We appreciate you so much, my friend. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You got.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.